Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Very, very fired up that this gentleman is going to join us because he truly has lived a charmed basketball life. You know him from his days coaching at Seton Hall, coaching the Portland Trail Blazers, did a fantastic job with the Brooklyn Nets when he was there for a half season. Now you see him all over the place doing NBA, doing college basketball, man of many talents. Let's welcome in the very outstanding and the terrific basketball lifer, PJ Carlissimo. Who joins us? PJ, it's John Jastrzemski. How you doing, my friend?
Excellent, Jay. How are you doing?
PJ, we're surviving here in New York City, my friend. I mean, really, it's the best way to look at it. So I guess this is where we begin. For you in this month of not having NBA basketball, not having the NCAA tournament, how's your month in lockdown been?
Well, it's been, it's been good from one standpoint, getting a chance to spend a lot of time with the family, which is nice. We've had more dinners. Two sons. We got an older guy's a junior at Seattle Prep, and then other guy's in eighth grade are going to be at Prep next year. So we've had a chance to spend a ton of time together from that aspect, which is good. But we're in Seattle. You're in New York. We've kind of been the two hot spots for a long time. Hopefully Seattle is getting a little ahead of it right now. We kind of started a week or so ahead of everybody. But the kids have been out of school for a couple weeks. They've been doing a good job with the online teaching. Both their schools, fortunately, were really prepared for that and have done a good job. But I mean, they're going a little crazy. They get to shoot out in the back, but it's not quite the same. And selfishly for me, it was my favorite 4 weeks of the year. I had a game March 10th, I think it was, Dallas at San Antonio. Pop and I went out to dinner after the game. Good win for the Spurs. We went out to dinner after the game, and I flew to Las Vegas the next day planning on doing Pac-12 tournament for Westwood One, starting 3 weeks of college where I would be doing the entire NCAA tournament and with a couple of NBA games stuck in there on Mondays or Tuesdays. And I went from my busiest and one of my favorite times of the year, 4 weeks, to being home. So it's, you know, like everybody else, you got to deal with it. I think I'm enjoying it. I think my wife's ready to, ship me on the road for sure. But other than that, it's been trying to stay ahead of it, spending a lot of time at home, clean the house and do some cooking and do what everybody else is doing right now, trying to get out from under this.
Well, PJ, I can tell you, as a guy who's doing radio shows from his apartment in Brooklyn, New York, I think my girlfriend is dying for the day where I can get back into a studio and I'm not waking up the entire neighborhood, because you know it. In Brooklyn, we project quite well, my friend. So you know our neighbors when they hear me yelling and screaming about God knows what at 4 and 5 in the morning on WFAN, they're counting down that day too. But, Coach, you know, your name was in the news a lot because of the year that Kevin Willard was having at Seton Hall. And I think about all these seniors, you know, Peyton Pritchard at Oregon, Miles Powell at Seton Hall. You look forward, you build up to playing in an NCAA tournament, and to not have that opportunity, I understand there are bigger things going on in the world, so we all get that. But my heart breaks for those kids because they busted their butts. I thought it'd be their time. I thought it'd be their moment. So following along out on the West Coast, it must have given you, you know, some feelings of nostalgia looking at what Seton Hall was able to do this year.
Well, you know, it did for sure. I mean, I stay very closely in touch with Kevin and the program. I mean, Kevin's been a good friend for a long time, and he's been very kind to, you know, let me stay involved. And I get to visit, I get to see usually a couple games a year, and obviously I followed him on television. But it really hurts because I think they had a legitimate chance to win a national championship. I think this year was one of those years when probably more teams than in a normal year actually had a realistic chance. And, you know, we all say that. Y'all put your hands in and say, hey, we're going to win the whole thing. But most years it's three or four, sometimes five teams that have a chance. I thought there were at least 10 this year that were viable. And I'm not so sure that if you gave me 10, I would have had the national champion. It was going to be that open. And the Hall was certainly one of those. They're excellent defensively. They had one of the best players in the country in Powell, who you mentioned. They had bigs. I mean, they were good on both ends of the floor. They defended. They could score. They had bigs who could protect the basket and also score. And they had a great player. When you have guards, I mean, their backcourt I thought was excellent. They took good care of the ball and they could score. Guards, particularly in March and April when it comes to the Big East tournament and then the 3 weeks of the NCAA, guards are a very rare commodity. And they had them. The Hall had him. I was really looking forward to watching him. I don't know if I would have had him. I was going to be in Sacramento the first week and then Houston for the regional. But, I was telling Kevin, if I didn't hook up with them first round or second round, I'd meet him in Atlanta. So it's too bad. And you know, people ask us all the time about what it was like, particularly the Final Four run in 89 when we got to the championship game. And, you know, you say it, I've said it, I can't tell you how many times I've said it, we call it a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And as you said, the opportunity for that experience is gone for the seniors. And it's really gone for the entire team, only because that team won't be back. You know what I mean? It's a team thing. And that, to me, was the saddest thing, almost as sad as losing to Michigan in a championship game. I remember vividly in that locker room at the Kingdome, which has since been knocked down here in Seattle, but kind of walking out of the locker room and realizing we weren't going to practice together again and we weren't going to play a game again. Yeah, we were going to be together. There were going to be dinners and parades and a lot of great things that happened, but we would never get a chance to be together as a basketball team again. And that's what these guys missed. And there's no way of replicating that, and they're not going to get it back. Yeah, good news for the young guys, that they'll get another chance, but they won't get a chance with this team. And this team was a very special team that Kevin Willard had at Seton Hall.
PJ, for your sake and my sake, thank God the Kingdome is gone, because I think of that place, the Yankees losing there for years, House of Horrors. I love Safeco Field. Seattle's a great city. I am so glad I will never see an event in the Kingdome ever again.
I got mixed feelings, you know, John. We got beat in a championship game by 1 point, but we beat Duke in the semi. And then 2 years later, a lot of people forget, 91, we were back here in Seattle in the regional, West Regional. We beat Arizona in the round of 16 and undefeated Vegas, the Vegas team that was the defending national champ, and they were, I think, 31-0, beat us in the Elite Eight to go to the Final Four, and then Duke beat them. Duke upset them. They had beaten Duke the year before, but the following year, the undefeated team, we played them in the Kingdome also. So we were 2-2 in the Kingdome. I can't complain. I mean, if it's an Elite Eight and a Final Four, a championship game, it was a good building. But I'm with you. I love going downtown safe. I guess it's T-Mobile now, and CenturyLink, Quest is CenturyLink. I can't even keep track of the names.
I was going to say, good luck with the sponsors, Coach. I mean, good luck. The Dolphins really do it every other year with their stadium. So the fact that you know them, I give you some credit. That's why you're a very, very good resident of your town, and that's why you're making the rounds representing the Pacific Northwest. I got to ask you this question, because you're a guy who's had great success in college, and you've done a terrific job in the NBA leading the team. Obviously, both experiences are very, very different. What did you enjoy more, the idea of being a college coach or the idea of being an NBA coach?
It's a cop-out. I love both of them. I mean, I coached in college for 23 years, and I honestly, I don't think I spent 5 minutes of those 23 years thinking about coaching in the NBA. It wasn't something I really had in mind. And, yeah, maybe it could have happened at some point later in my career, you know, with the – you got two teams, the Knicks and the Nets right there. Maybe, you know, down the line it was going to happen. It was just – it was very unusual. Brad Greenberg was the acting general manager after they had let Rick Adelman go in Portland. And I think looking back – Paul Allen had in mind the late owner, great owner, by the way, also Seahawk owner, the Blazers owner. I think he had in mind he wanted to change it up. He wanted a college guy. And Brad called me up and said, why don't you come out and interview? And, you know, I talked to Larry Keating, our athletic director, and the fact that it was Portland, Mark Bryant was already here, one of our players. I'd been with Nike for a lot of years, and I went out not really – being serious about it, to be honest with you. But it was like, oh, this, you know, it's a good experience. Let's interview for an NBA job and, you know, something you check off. Maybe it'll come back years later. And in the middle of the interview, Paul offered me the job. And it literally was that sudden. And I loved every day in the NBA also. So if you made me pick one, I'd pick NBA. There's a lot of things I miss from college, the experience dealing with the players and their families, particularly in those days. You had players for 3-4 years. They graduated, and it was really special. Some of those guys you knew from their, like, freshman or sophomore year in high school, so you really had a relationship with them. Coaching, being on a campus, particularly Seton Hall, the fans we had, the support we enjoyed back in those days in the Meadowlands was special. The NBA, what's good about the NBA is you're coaching the best players in the world. You're playing in the best buildings in the world. You're doing it in an absolute first-class way. I mean, everything's, a charter, and it just doesn't get any better. If you like basketball, it's really the epitome of basketball. So from a standpoint of pure basketball, I love the NBA. And that's the other thing. When you're coaching the NBA, you don't do anything else but basketball. I mean, it's your next practice, it's your next game, it's your next shoot-around. There's no recruiting, there's no, getting your players to go to class and summer jobs and raising money for the school and, representing the university. It's literally, you're on the floor, whether it's at practice or game or a shoot-around. That's all you do. So it's hard to beat the NBA, I think, from a purely basketball standpoint.
We have the terrific P.J. Carlissimo, the outstanding head coach at Seton Hall, and a tremendous NBA career as a coach, as an assistant coach. He's great on TV. He's great on radio. I mean, I could listen to P.J. talk basketball for hours. Coach, thankfully for your sake, you're not going to do that. But I do got to ask you about Duncan, because you won 3 championships working with Greg Popovich. You got a firsthand look at what Tim Duncan brings to the table. And, you know, maybe it's his personality. And maybe it's because Tim Duncan was never a guy that was demanding of the attention. He is hands down one of the best players I've ever seen in my life. I think he's the best power forward in the history of the NBA. If there's one thing you'd like to share with the audience of, you know, a perspective and, you know, something you experienced being alongside Tim Duncan for all those years, what really stands out?
Well, I'll tell you, I agree with you, first of all. I think he is the best power forward to ever play the game. I mean, he's one of, I say 5, at worst 10. You can't keep him out of the top 10 of players who you know, played in the NBA and what they accomplished. It's funny because with all the games being replayed now, I did 2 specials last week, one for ESPN and one actually for San Antonio Television. And the one that they watched, Game 6, of the 03 championship when we beat the Nets in Game 6 at home, and the other one was Game 7 in 05 of the Pistons, when we also ended up being a home game, actually. But it was interesting because you forget a lot of things. As you get older, I'm approaching senility here, but that 03 championship, watching the game, it was unbelievable because it was David Robinson's last game, and he went out, you know, the absolute perfect way for a guy to go out. He had a tremendous second half, played really well. Pop, as usual, did a great job. Going back, we finished the game with Steven Jackson and Speedy Claxton playing the entire fourth quarter or close to it. Jack hit 3 big threes in the fourth quarter, and Speedy Claxton from Hofstra, and an excellent guard, played well. Pop had TP on the bench, and he just stayed with the hot hand. We were down, I think it was 9 points in the fourth quarter, and went a 19-0 run in the fourth quarter. Steven Jackson threes were in that run. But TD, all he did was go for 21 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists, and they had him on the stat sheet, unfortunately, for 8 blocks. Turned out he had 10 when they redid the watch the game after and did it. They gave one to David and one to somebody else. But he had a quadruple-double in the Game 6 clinching game. Obviously, he was the MVP of the playoffs. But, I mean, I'd forgotten just what an incredible – I think it's the best clinching game any individual ever had. And that was, you know, that was TD. You're right. He didn't want the attention. A lot of coaches, a lot of players say, well, I really don't want to do interviews. But as you know, JJ, from talking to us, we'll talk all day and we're happy to do it. Pop and Tim Duncan have one thing in common. They have a lot of things in common, but they got one thing in common. Neither one of them ever wanted to do an interview. If they never did an interview in their lives, they would have been delighted. And that was part of the thing with TD. He's a private person in terms of letting the outside in. But if you're a teammate, or if you're lucky enough to have him on a team, what he is, he's such as great a player. We said it. He's arguably one of the best to ever play the game. I don't think arguably. And he's a better person, and he's a better teammate than he was a player. And he has a great sense of humor. So, like, you wouldn't know that if you weren't a Spur, if you weren't a teammate of his. If you talk to his teammates, that's what they talk about, the person Tim Duncan, not the player. The player's ridiculous. You knew he was going to block a shot or make a play. He had a play in that game. He blocked a shot, and he didn't block him, like, out of bounds. Same way, he played the same way he was, not fancy. He kind of blocked, he tipped it up in the air, came down with it himself, dribbled down the court and stopped and hit a top of the key jump shot. He never did that. We were down 5. We needed a bucket. He knocked it. He got it to 3. I mean, he was that special a player. But honestly, it's a cliche, but he's a better person. He was a better teammate.
And coach, isn't it remarkable? They lose that 2013 championship, which they should have won. We know what happened in Game 6. You were exactly doing the games at the time. 5-point lead. I mean, you play that game 100 times with that situation, the Spurs are going to win 96 or 97. To come back, though, the following year, and you know this, you're a basketball lifer, you're a sports lifer, coach. For many teams, they don't get back to that point because they're broken mentally. How do they respond? Well, not only do the Spurs respond, coach, they go and they win in 5 games and smoke the Miami Heat the following year. And I got to be honest with you, coach, I don't know if they win that championship if they don't lose the following year. I mean, I had never seen anything like it from like a revenge tour standpoint, you know?
It fueled them the entire year. That's what fueled them. They were so upset, TD in particular, because I wasn't there then, but the Spurs went small because they knew that Miami needed to shoot a 3. TD was on the bench. Boris Diaw was in, and people kind of forget about it. But they got back-to-back 3s. LeBron hit one. Ray Allen hit the other. There were some free throws in between there, some missed free throws, some made free throws by the Spurs. I think Manu went 3 for 4, and Kawhi split a pair, actually late, that really hurt them. But they had 2 of their 3-point shots, the one by LeBron and the one by Ray, were both off offensive rebounds. And TD wasn't on the floor. And, you know, like we kids about it, but, he said, hey, that wouldn't have happened if I was on the floor. So, you know, they went for a defensive matchup where they could switch the pick and rolls outside and guard the 3 better, but they didn't come up with either. LeBron missed badly his first 3. I don't know if it hit the rim, but they came up with the rebound. I think it was Chris Bosh both times, came up with the rebound and kicked it out, and then Bron knocked the second one down. That was their first 3, and then, of course, everybody remembers the Ray Allen one, but that was off a miss also, which people, you know, don't remember. So it was it's amazing, but the Spurs used that as fuel the entire time. The one thing they were never able to do was repeat. They won in 99 when I think Tim was a rookie, first or second year. David was Tim and David.
Taking down my Knicks. Talk about a mismatch of a series, PJ. Yeah, the Knicks, exactly, with Patrick on the sideline. What could have been?
They won it in 03. We won it in 03 against Jersey. Couldn't repeat. We had the Derek Fisher 0.4-second shot the next year for the Lakers to beat us in the – I can't remember whether it was the semis or the conference finals. I think it was the finals. And then we won it in 05 against Pistons. 06, we lose to Dallas in the semis. We're up 3. The only way we can lose the game is if we foul. And unfortunately, Manu fouled Dirk Nowitzki going to the basket. Dirk gets an and one, scores, puts the game into overtime, and they beat us in overtime. And then we won it again in 07 against the Cavaliers, 4-0, a sweep, and couldn't repeat the next year. They were never able to repeat. So, you know, I wouldn't disagree with you. If the Spurs had won in 13, which they had game six, they would have won, you know, 4-2. They would have won on Miami's court. I don't know that they would have repeated again, but I'll tell you what, that losing that game fueled them for, like, I think from the time they left Miami Arena, American Airlines Arena, after game seven, I think that was all they thought about until they clinched it the following year.
Coach, in all your years of being in basketball, it must have been surreal being on that Dream Team staff. And listen, you see all those guys coming in. It's Jordan, it's Bird, it's Magic, it's Patrick, Barkley. That list goes on and on. I can't wait to watch this Last Dance documentary, even though that Chicago team brought me nothing but pain and torture as a guy who grew up rooting for Patrick Ewing, John Starks, and all those guys. But what, like, stands out to you in all those years now, thinking back of what you were a part of with that legendary group of players being together?
Well, that summer was, you know, it's hard to say I ever had 2 months more special than that summer. A week in La Jolla, we started at UC San Diego, practiced for a week there, scrimmaged against a really elite college team, you know, college all-star team, Penny Hardaway, Bob Hurley, Chris Webber, I mean, so many great players. Scrimmaged against them, that went to Portland, which a lot of people forget. We had to qualify because in 88 we had not won the gold medal in Seoul. It was a different qualifying system in those days. So we had to qualify in a tournament in the Americas in Portland, played for a week in Portland around 4th of July, early July in Portland, and you know, won all the games against the teams from the Americas to qualify. Then we had a week in Monte Carlo to get ready before we went to Barcelona, and then, of course, the 2 weeks, or a little less than 2 weeks, in Barcelona. The most impressive thing to me was the professionalism of the players, because it was people forget, it was a unique time. You had a couple of elements in play there. You had guys like Michael Jordan and Patrick and Chris Mullin, who you mentioned, who had been on the 84 team and had already won a gold medal. You had David Robinson, who was on the 88 team, who had lost, didn't win a gold medal. And then you had a bunch of guys, Charles Barkley and John Stockton, come to mind right away, who were like last cuts on a previous Olympic team, so never got a chance to play in the Olympics. And then you had Birdie and Magic and those other guys, because in those days it was, you know, when it was an Olympic year, if you happened to be in college that at that point, it was your time to play. If you didn't, if it didn't match up, the opportunity was gone. So that was the first time that they let the professionals play, the NBA players play. We had to score to settle because we had not won in 88, and you had a lot of guys that just were licking their chops to be a part of an Olympic experience, and they just bought into everything Chuck Daly asked them to do, and they were great. They practiced hard. They played hard. You go back and watch those games. I think the thing that will impress you the most was the defense and the passing, the unselfishness. If anything, we overpassed. They just shared the ball. It was unbelievable basketball to watch how well they defended, how well they shared the ball, and how little they cared about who got points. Or, you know, it was literally one of those things, you know, always after a game, whether it's college or NBA, when the managers or the ball boy comes in and passes out the stat sheet, you'll see guys grab the stat sheet to see what they got, how many minutes they played or how many points they got. I don't think the guy looked at the stat sheet the entire time that summer. All they cared about was the final score, and the final score was so one-sided every time we played. And, you know, it was good. It was really impressive to see that level of player not take anything for granted and practice as hard and play as hard as they did. And it was easy to understand then. Don't forget, I'm 92. I'm still at Seton Hall. It was easy to understand why these guys were the best players in the world, because of, you know, how professional they were and how they didn't take any shortcuts. They worked at their craft, and it showed.
Coach, final one before we get you out of here, and you've been absolutely fantastic. If the NBA comes back, I know you're hoping for it. I'm clearly hoping for it. We have no idea what it could look like. No fans, neutral site, out in Vegas, Bahamas. I mean, every option has been discussed. But if they do come back, Lakers clear cut, team to beat. I still look at the Clippers. You get Kawhi, who won Finals MVP last year. Put him with Paul George. You got so many unique wing-type players. I would look at them as the team I'd be putting my money on. If there's an NBA season, who right now would be that favorite, in your opinion, to be the best?
Well, I think it'd be two, and I think it's the two that, you know, were dominating the league. The Bucks in the East and the Lakers in the West. And I was not on the Laker bandwagon early. I thought they'd be, obviously they're going to be good with that talent, but I thought it'd take them a while to get it together. It did not. I mean, from day one, they were good. I didn't think they could defend the way they've defended. Their defense is so underrated. Frank Vogel's done a great job. LeBron has done a really good job in terms of being demanding of his teammates. And if anything, they're underrated defensively. I don't think people realize just how good the Lakers were playing defensively. And Mike Budenholzer, for the second year in a row, has the best team in the Eastern Conference. And I think they would benefit from their playoff experience last year. I think Giannis is a better player this year than he was last year. I thought, you know, when they were playing, the two of them, if I was Bud or if I was Frank Vogel, all I would have wanted to do was fast forward to the playoffs, because they were clear-cut the two best teams in the league. I know the Clippers needed to get their guys healthy and needed to get them to practice, but they weren't close to yet, in my opinion, playing at the level the Lakers were playing. Now, it's a startup. I still like those guys because of what they've accomplished and, you know, playing as many games as they played. But I got news for you. This is an all-star break. This is a major let's start all over. You got some guys who will be healthy who were not healthy in the regular season. I just don't know. A lot's going to depend on how much time these teams get to practice, what kind of regular season. If Adam Silver and the people in the NBA feel they're going to try and salvage some of the regular season, or they're just going to go into the playoffs. So it's going to be a different animal. I still like the Lakers. I still like the Bucks, but all bets are off, I think, because this is starting all over. And you know what it looks like in October and November when teams start up and they're not in basketball shape yet and you don't see the best from a lot of teams for a while. I do like those two teams, but I think it's going to be wildly unpredictable.
PJ, unbelievable perspective. Really appreciate the time. And real quick, 10 seconds. You coached at Wagner College. I'm a Staten Island native. Favorite restaurant that you miss on your times being up at Grimes Hill? It's got to be one you miss, right?
The Roadhouse.
Oh, the Roadhouse. Did you get the clam pie, PJ?
I love the Roadhouse. I ate there four or five nights a week, and it was great. The DeAndrea family was so good to us, and anytime I'm back, I still like to get over there. I love my 6 years on Staten Island. Really enjoyed it.
PJ, you're the best, man. Stay safe. Appreciate you coming on. Unbelievable perspective, and hopefully before you know it, you're talking some basketball soon, all right?
All right, JJ. Thank you.
PJ, unbelievable stuff. Appreciate a couple minutes.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week, because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.